All right. Well, good morning or afternoon, everyone, depending on what part of the country you're in right now. This is Brandon Garrett with the National Minority Quality Forum. We have reached April 1st, and if you know us at NMQF, you know that this month is the start of National Minority Health Month, which is something NMQF helped found back in April of 1998. To start off National Minority Health Month, we figure we start talking about our legislation that's going to be dropped later this month, the Health Equity and Accountability Act. Dr. Anita Burgos from the Congresswoman Kelly CBC Health Branches Chair Office has been leading the charge in getting this program done with a number of partners helping it put this together and help her along the way. And so we're going to discuss that legislation today. Before we get into it, I just have a couple of housekeeping announcements. One, if you have any questions, there's a box, a little tab for Q&A. Please place your question in that box. And two, if you're just kind of chatting, engaging, and wanting to put some thoughts there, there is the chat box right next to it. Finally, we hope to see you at the end of the month at our 20th annual Summit on Health Disparities. It's our 20th year of that program, our 25th year at NMQF. So it'd be good now that we can meet in person, as long as we do it safely, it'd be good to see you there. Without further ado, Dr. Burgos.
Thanks, Brandon. Hi, everyone. Welcome. So I am, as Brandon said, I'm Congresswoman Robin Kelly, Senior Health Policy Advisor. And by way of background, I am a scientist by training with a PhD in neuroscience from Columbia. In my time in DC, I've worked in the Senate, House, and think tank and have focused mostly on mental health and substance use disorder policy. And so I'm very excited to kick off National Minority Health Month with a discussion on the Health Equity and Accountability Act, also known as HEA. The Health Equity and Accountability Act is a tri-caucus collaboration that is a bill that is introduced every single Congress since 2003, and initially introduced by the great late Representative Elijah Cummings. And so what really kicked off the HEA and sort of that bill coming together was a 2002 report from the Institute of Medicine that entitled Minorities Receive Unequal Medical Treatment Even When Access is Similar. And so this report showed really without a doubt that when all other factors were controlled for, racial and ethnic minority groups still had less access to the most advanced treatments, interventions, quality healthcare, and thus suffered the worst health outcomes. And this was really a call to action for Congress. HEA remains the signature health equity bill in Congress to this day. It highlights the key priorities for health equity in Congress. And so I'm very happy to be part of the effort this year to lead HEA. HEA is over 1,600 pages, probably longer now after we've been editing it and updating it. And the bill has exactly 10 titles that address a wide-ranging number of topics, including maternal mortality, which is a big issue of importance to Congresswoman Kelly, expanding mental health services for communities of color, increasing funding and services for communities of color living with specific diseases that impact communities of color disproportionately. These include things like HIV and AIDS, prostate cancer, et cetera. Improving quality of care, data collection, culturally competent or culturally appropriate care, and addressing the social determinants of health. So there's a lot in this bill. Every year, as I sort of mentioned earlier, a different member of the Tri-Caucus introduces the bill. And the Tri-Caucus includes the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, and the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus. And the Congresswoman, as in her capacity as CBC Health Brain Trust Chair, introduces this bill every time the CBC is up to introduce the bill. HEA is also a bicameral collaboration, and Senators Warnock and Booker are planning to introduce HEA in the Senate. This Congress, I've worked really closely with our external partners, which include the National Minority Quality Forum and the National Urban League, to gather stakeholder and tri-caucus staff input so that we can properly update the bill. We are going to introduce HEA in the last week of April. So April 26th is our estimated introduction date, and we're really excited to have that overlap with National Minority Health Month. So let's jump right in and start talking about HIA and talking about the National Minority Health Month. And so I want to introduce two individuals who've been very involved in HIA. And so as I mentioned earlier, we've been working with working groups who've been updating the bill, mostly folks in the advocacy space. And so really excited to have Dr. Lydia Isaac on our panel today, who's with the National Urban League, who's one of our external partners. And so just a little bit of background about Dr. Isaac. She is the Vice President for Health Equity and Policy at the National Urban League. Dr. Isaac has a faculty appointment at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in the Department of Health Policy and Management. She most recently served as the Executive Director of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation-funded Health Policy Research Scholars Program, where she was responsible for the day-to-day operations and curriculum development for the program. Previously, she was the Director of Policy and Health Systems Analysis in the Office of Policy Planning and Strategic Data in the First Deputy Commissioner's Office at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. She has a bachelor's in ecology and evolutionary biology from Princeton University, a master's of science in health and social behavior from Harvard School of Public Health, and a doctorate in health policy and management from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're also thrilled to have Adam Bedawi. Adam is federal policy manager for the National Network for Arab American Communities, NNAAC, a national consortium of 29 community-based organizations in 12 different states. As a federal policy manager, Adam engages congressional staff and agency officials to advocate for policies and programs that achieve a just and equitable society. With the full inclusion of the Middle Eastern and North African communities, Adam also convenes the NNAAC, and let me know if there's another way to pronounce that, Advocacy and Civic Engagement Committee, as well as the MENA Category Working Group. Adam received his BA from the University of Virginia, where he studied philosophy and cognitive science. He's also expected to complete his Master's of Science degree in data analytics and policy from Johns Hopkins University in the spring of 2023. So very excited to have you both on the panel. Thank you for joining us today. And so before we get started, I did want to provide a little bit of history on the National Minority Health Month. And so this is the National Minority Health Month takes place every April. And really, the month has two goals. The first is to build awareness around the disproportionate burden of premature death and illness in people from racial and ethnic minority groups, encourages action through health education, early detection, and control of disease complications. The origin of the National Minority Health Month actually goes all the way back to 1915, when Booker T. Washington established the National Negro Health Week. And so in 2002, Congress passed a resolution to make National Minority Health Month officially a thing that happens every April. So that's a little bit of background for you all who are wondering about where this month came about and what it focuses on. And so with that, let's begin by discussing, before we even dig into HIA itself, why don't we talk a little bit more about the need for legislation that advances health equity. So Dr. Isaac, could you speak a little bit to the need to address health equity and what contributes to health inequities in our country?
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Burgos. And I wanna say welcome to everybody who's on this call, and I'm honored to be in this esteemed panel with Adam and Anita talking about HIA and all the work that we've been doing for the past, 9 months, I think, maybe a year, on updating all of these titles. So I think it's really important for us to set the stage about why legislation on health equity is needed, as many people in this audience know, but you know, I'm gonna repeat it to the top of the mountains until somebody finally listens, is that, you know, health equity is not just about health care, it's about the social determinants of health. And it's really important for us to understand that a person's health and the outcomes that they have, the health outcomes that they have, is impacted by so many different things, not just the medical care they receive, not just going to the hospital or the doctor, but also where they live, where they go to work, where they go to school, where they play, their access to services like supermarkets, like affordable housing, their job that they have, and what that puts us at risk. And we saw during this pandemic and this COVID crisis, for example, folks that we considered essential workers, our cashiers, folks who were doing deliveries, were put more exposed at risk because they had to continue to work because they were considered essential, but we didn't always protect them the way we needed to. So their occupation put them at higher risk for getting COVID. And therefore, it's important for us to understand health equity from this larger lens of social determinants and not just from medical care or access to prescriptions, but how your life and where you live and what you do and all the aspects of your life, where you go to school. We saw the learning disabilities, or not disabilities, or learning losses that happen with our students, particularly students of color who didn't have access to broadband, and how they were able to go to school and what does that do for their learning and their development going further, going further in their lives. So I think it's really important for us to think about, as Anita said, 1600 pages, but because the bill is 1600 pages, because it addresses a lot of these social determinants, it really does talk about how we how vulnerable populations and groups that have not always gotten the resources that they needed and the services they needed to live a healthy life get those services access. And it's not just about can they make it to the doctor, it's do they have somewhere to live, are they living in an environment, we think about climate change, we think about all these things that are impacting communities we care about, and thinking about why it's important for us to have it in one place that says, listen, we can't handle this piecemeal, we really have to look at the large complex factors that impact people's health and their health outcomes. And a bill like HEA really starts us to think about it comprehensively of all, and we're never going to hit everything, right? We know we're not going to hit everything, but we're trying to put together in a package the main large areas of health that are social determinants that impact health. And so it's really important for us to look at health equity from a broader lens than just healthcare and medicine, and think about all the things in the environment, the people, social, physical, emotional environment that impact people's health outcomes. So it's important. People say, well, why do you need this other act? We're talking about Medicaid and Medicare and all sorts of other things, but that's not just the only thing. And I'll leave it. The last statement is, we know there's evidence out there that says healthcare is only 30% of, contributes to 30% of somebody's health outcomes. So we need HEA. What HEA looks at is the 70%. What are those things that impact people's health outcomes, and how do we get them to a place that, it doesn't impact in that way, or it supports a healthy living environment.
Yeah, thank you for outlining that framework for us. I think it's really important to think about healthcare in that way. And that's, I think people in the health equity space tend to know this, and there now is a growing understanding kind of among policymakers that it's not just the services, you know, in the clinic, but really we have to look at the person in a really holistic way. So thank you for outlining those points for us. And so Mr. Berawi, how have advocates and stakeholders contributed to the 117th introduction of HEA? I know that you've been involved in some of those efforts. What are some of the topics that your organization has been focusing on in terms of the HEA updates?
Yeah, no, thank you, Dr. Burgos. It was great hearing Dr. Isaac give that layout of health equity, because I think it's a good lead into the process that stakeholders and advocates underwent to get this text ready. I was especially, from my position with the National Network for Arab American Communities, or NAAC, I was especially pleased and impressed with this process, because it really did kind of it was a good conduit to equity, in a sense, meant traditionally, like having organizations or groups that are typically on the margins of society start to have stake in the present and the future of the country. So equity in that kind of classical sense. So, similarly, we were formed into working groups and kind of given the support and prompting necessary to consider the previous version of the legislation in light of new information, a lot of which we've received over the last 2 years. There was like a built-in system of checks and balances almost between the working groups for each title and the broader coalition of organizations coming together to work on HEA. And so ultimately that process reflected an understanding that those with most at stake in each issue should develop solutions, and then that are checked against collaboration between stakeholders. So I really appreciated the process from the perspective of an organization serving a community like the MENA community, which is so often unrecognized in conversations around health equity and minority health concerns. And that kind of leads into the key issues that I focused on in our work. And there were a few specific reasons I focused on these issues. So I focused on data collection and reporting because the federal government, including the National Center for Health Statistics, just does not collect nor report demographic data on individuals from the Middle East and North Africa. So, you know, our data is aggregated into the white reference category, and ultimately that obscures an understanding of health disparity, like the science behind health disparities, which Dr. Isaac was getting to, and also just first and foremost puts a kind of cap on health outcomes for the MENA community. We also focused on culturally and linguistically appropriate health and healthcare, health workforce diversity, and improving healthcare access and quality, because while our diverse client base often receives the best care from health servicemen and women who share with them cultural and linguistic affinity, members of our community lack established pathways to enter the healthcare workforce. Existing health workers have a lack of situational awareness regarding our community members' pre-existing health conditions, and community members may just outright lack access to quality healthcare in the first place. So each, you know, title of HIA that addressed those broader areas, I think, took really good steps to correcting some of these gaps. And we focused on mental health as well, because members of MENA communities as immigrants, refugees, or victims of discrimination and social isolation experience a variety of social determinants of poor or adverse mental health outcomes. So from the outset, we were focused on these principal issues, or these issues that principally affected the community we serve. And that necessarily brought us into coalition with members of other groups, because we all experience one healthcare system, uneven though it may be. So in any event, like, we know that all other stakeholders in this process kind of approached it similarly, so that the end result forms something of a tapestry of our collective goals, or like a synthesis of best steps to address the needs of our community. So I was very pleased with that process in that sense.
Great, thank you so much. And you started going a little bit into some of the changes that have taken place and the titles that you worked on, and that you really helped be an advocate for those changes. And so, Dr. Isaac, are there any other changes that come to mind? I know you worked on a couple of different titles, and also are just part of the National Urban League, which is one of our key partners. Are there any changes that you'd like to highlight for the audience today that were taking place in the 117th introduction of HIA?
Yeah, and Adam led us into some of just thinking about the groups that were underneath HIA. So not only adding the MENA groups, but also really thinking about LGBTQ plus populations, also tribal communities, how we not only think about tribal communities who are on reservations, but who are living, as most people know, I think that actually most folks who are registered members of tribes actually live in cities and not on reservations. And so thinking about how to not limit the efforts to tribal communities to just those who are on reservations, which is handled by the Indian Health Service, but thinking broader about tribal communities. So really expanding the definition that, you know, in our presentation that we talked about earlier in New Orleans, you know, somebody talked about making sure everybody was at the table, right? Because as Adam said, many of the issues that we're talking about impact many different populations who have disparate outcomes. And so thinking about being specific and being, you know, helping, but also being inclusive. And so that is one. Really also thinking about COVID, you know, we didn't want to make this all COVID all the time bill, you know, because we want this bill to make sure that it definitely goes beyond, this year. We know that, you know, we hope it gets passed, but the likelihood, you know, we've been introducing it for 10 years. So, you know, the possibility it may not get passed is high. And so we want to make sure that the provisions of this bill go beyond this Congress. And, you know, but making sure that COVID issues like long COVID, like the disparities we saw among essential workers, among the public health workforce, are thought about and strategically and for sustainability in the future, so that not only COVID, but something else, because let's be honest, folks, something else is gonna come along. It may not take 100 years like it did this time, that we have the infrastructure that when something else, or if and when something else comes that's going to impact communities that we care about disproportionately, that we are ready to make that charge. And so some of the stuff in HIA is thinking about, how do we think about these emerging infectious or other diseases? Also, we have some thoughts about climate change, which were not originally in there. There was small sections on doing things around, you know, oil spills and things like that, but really thinking more broadly about how climate change impacts communities of color in particular, where they live, insurance, things like that. And so I think we really tried, you know, hence why it's 1600 plus pages, we really tried to be comprehensive in thinking about all the factors that really, and the things that we saw in these past 2 years that I think we had thought about, but we had not cogently put together in HIA, that impacted the community, the disproportionately impacted, particularly African-American and Latino communities during this time. And so those are some of the highlights that we really tried to think about sustainability and moving forward, and not just about COVID, but the underlying root causes of what happened during the pandemic.
Yeah, and you brought up some really great points, Dr. Isaac, that I wanted to build on a little bit. And so I think I love what you said about how this bill is, we're taking lessons learned from COVID. So the bill itself doesn't really address COVID, but we're taking those lessons that we learned. And Dr. Badawi, you mentioned that a little bit too, kind of what we've learned over the last 2 years. So just wanted to underline that very important point. I think also one thing that you mentioned that I wanted to clarify is that the bill, because it's a tri-caucus collaboration, like when we think about health equity with this bill, we're really focusing on racially and ethnically diverse communities, but we're looking at these issues in an intersectional lens. So that's when the LGBTQ community comes in and other things that we're sort of looking at too. So we really want to keep that focus on racial and ethnic communities, but also diverse communities, but also realize that they have a lot of other, you know, there are different dynamics and intersecting identities there. And so that's really one of the beautiful things about HIA, is that it's so inclusive, even though we're kind of looking at it through a specific focus. And a couple of things I also wanted to touch on are in terms of like what HIA and like, will it get passed into law and that sort of thing that questions you might get from our audience today. And so the way that HIA has worked in the past is, yes, it's been introduced every single year for since 2003, but so the way that things often work in Congress is that maybe an entire bill won't pass, but pieces of the bill will pass. And so what's been happening with HIA is that pieces have been taken off and introduced introduced as separate bills themselves. And then when there's a larger bill moving, like the Affordable Care Act, then we'll have pieces of HIA kind of ride along with that bigger bill. So for example, there were a couple of provisions in HIA that made it into the Affordable Care Act, and those such as establishing offices of minority health at SAMHSA and other agencies kind of throughout the federal government, which was really great. So most recently, there was some language around getting Medicaid beneficiaries to making it easier for them to participate in clinical trials that was passed into law last year. And so that, you know, we can remove that from HIA this year. So there's just, HIA is an ever-evolving document. It really is kind of telling us what the current state of health equity issues are in Congress, and it's meant to evolve. And so, of course, we would love to see the whole entire bill pass into law, but we're also at the same, in parallel, working to get pieces of the bill passed into law as other kind of vehicles are moving along. So I wanted to clarify that for the audience today. And some of the other things I wanted to highlight about HIA that are different this time around or in this Congress is that there's a really big focus on clinical trial diversity. There have always been provisions in HIA on clinical trial diversity, but this bill, but the Congresswoman has been working on an NIH Clinical Trial Diversity Act, and there are a few others, and like the Diverse Act, which will be included this year. And they're looking at not specifically clinical trial diversity in a subset, like of a population, or in more clearly saying like, oh, in Alzheimer's or in a specific disease, but we're looking at the whole clinical trial system and figuring out how can we make cross-cutting changes that can help regardless of the diseases being studied. We want to make sure that there are policies in place to really encourage and facilitate that clinical trial diversity. There's also language about bolstering mental health within and outside of the clinic. So legislation or rather policies that address mobile crisis services, services in school, integrated care, that sort of thing. So some of that was already in there, but we really built on it this Congress. We talked about more general kind of inclusive language. Also, a lot of the instances of disparity were changed to inequities to really reflect, kind of take the onus off of, you know, just looking at the differences, but really looking at a systemic level and how there are systemic failures that lead to these inequities. So we want to talk about it in that way. Also, there is more language in the bill that is supportive of a woman's right to choose, just given kind of the assaults that have been taking place in various states around the country on this issue. The House, I believe it was last year, passed bills for the first time, make into law the protections that would support a woman's right to choose and to have an abortion. So we don't include that specific language in the bill, but we include language that says we are supportive of these changes that are spelled out in the bills that were passed into law, not passed into law, I wish, that were passed out of the House last year. There are also some telehealth provisions that were included in the bill this time around in HIA that would allow telehealth services wherever a patient is located. So things that are kind of taking place right now during the public health emergency, but making sure that they are permanent outside of the public health emergency. And so as we talk about the change in landscape, we talk a lot about COVID, but one of the things that has also happened in the last 2 years is that there's been sort of a lot of focus on social justice, and with the murder of George Floyd, that took place after HIA was introduced. HIA was introduced April 2020. And so there, you know, that ignited a whole social movement and increased consciousness regarding how systemic racism impacts many parts of our society, including health. And so I wanted to ask you all, like, has that, are you seeing a change in how people are looking at health equity? Like, has that impacted your health equity work in any way? Any new opportunities to really elevate this work?
I mean, for us, we all got really caught up in what occurred 2 years ago. And there was this really, you know, a tragic incident and an exceedingly, tough summer for many of us who have been pushing on issues that became highlighted, after, you know, this sort of moment of reckoning. And so while it's, you know, in some sense, it's a tragic irony that it occurs after such an incident, I ultimately welcome the sea change in how we think about healthcare access and quality. I really, for us, started to look at health equity in that sense I alluded to earlier, where if you have individuals in this country who do not feel served by a system for delivering healthcare services, it has these cascading effects that tend to manifest in burden on the healthcare, you know, system. Unchecked or unscreened individuals who end up having, again, these adverse health outcomes because they wonder, hey, if I'm not getting the service I need, maybe I shouldn't be interact with the service delivery system in the first place. So they pull out, or they come back sort of scattered. We see a lot of this with our service population, which tends to be immigrants and refugees. So thinking about health equity in this sense of doing right by people so that they feel stake in the system, they contribute to the system, and it ultimately serves them, that really started to click for me after this moment of reckoning a few years prior. And then you start to see who your allies in this sort of fight can be. It felt like a lot of organizations came together after that moment. And I think for us, it's trying to make sure that you keep up the momentum so that it doesn't become something where you wait for tragic incidents to occur before you really take stock of what you're sitting on top of, which was a healthcare system riddled with these inequities that now I think people are starting to talk about more clear-eyed than they have in the past.
I would say I agree. One of the things that I think we put or is reflected somewhat in HIA is this idea of systemic racism and what that actually means. And I think you can start to put those statements and those type of kind of ideas into legislation like this and it not it's going to meet resistance. Let me just say that it's going to meet resistance, but not meet the level of resistance that it has in the past, or people not even understanding what you're saying. And so we were able to make small tweaks in the legislation to put things like racism, to think about criminal justice from a larger standpoint than just, you know, who's going to jail, who's not going to jail, but how the system itself is impacting communities of color, and particularly African-American boys and men, and really thinking about how the system is working that way. And I think what that incident allowed people to see is that these issues are systemic. And so being able to use words like systemic racism, to be able to use racism to begin with, you know, in any kind of this. And I know it's not a lot in the bill, but we did try to put some instances of systemic racism. And I think Anita's point of really moving it from health disparities to health inequities is a huge change, because inequities as a word has a moral judgment in it. And inequity means that it's not fair. And so once you start having people feel okay with using that word and understanding what that word means, that changes the conversation. And I think that's actually no small feat. Just that change right there particularly is big and it's important. And I think, as Adam said, as unfortunate as the George Floyd and all the other Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor incidents were in 2020, they helped to start these conversations and they helped the broader populace to understand what I think many of us in this community and many of us who do this work have been saying for a long time, that these issues are baked into our systems. And if we don't recognize and see that, then no matter how much we want to say we want to work with communities, we're not going to be able to, because we're not going to recognize that fundamentally there's something in the system that's not allowing immigrant and refugee communities to feel welcome, that's not allowing low-income communities to get access to the care they need, and that's causing these social determinants to have adverse effects on people's health instead of supporting a health and promoting environment. So I think that's really important for us to see that, as much, I know there's a lot of people on this call who may say not enough has been done, but just being able to start to have these conversations and put those type of words in legislation is an advancement, even if it's not the advancement that we're looking for.
Yeah, I think that was so well put by both of you. So I appreciate those. And I agree 100%. I think it's just good to see more of a focus, a concerted effort around these issues, and just like having everyone at the table really try to figure out how to address health inequities. And so it's important to recognize that progress, even though it, of course, doesn't feel like enough. So we're talking a lot about what's in the bill right now. And so I kind of wanted to ask you all if there were things that maybe we could kind of, so next year, the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus has the bill, and Barbara Lee's office, she sits on both CBC and KPAC. And so her office will be leading the charge next year. And so are there things, kind of policies that you would like to see in that version of the bill that maybe we didn't have enough time to fully like get into this time? And I can start. I will say that, so as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, my expertise is in mental health and substance use disorder policy. It's an issue that is very near and dear to me on a personal level. And also just as my background as a neuroscientist, just like, you know, I care a lot about brain stuff and mental health services. So I think we did a good job at bolstering some of the mental health pieces in the bill, but I think there's a lot of work to be done on the substance use disorder work in the bill, because that does impact, you know, there's a lot that's going on in communities of color. In terms of lack of access to treatments and not really getting kind of the best treatments to address substance use disorders. So that is something, and of course, just overall, like 10% of people with a substance use disorder actually are being treated for the disorder. So I think there's a lot more that can be done there. I think there's some, you know, we talk about some Medicare policies in the bill, but I think overall elderly care is something that's not really highlighted as much in the bill. And so I think that would be a good place to maybe build on next year. But so if either of you had any other ideas, would love to hear them.
So I mentioned it earlier, we started to touch a little bit on climate change, but I think there's a whole lot more we could do on climate change and really thinking about how climate change is going to impact communities, low-income communities, communities of color, just the world in general. Like we think about food, we think about all this other thing that's happening. So I what I would like to see is us take a little bit more broader, not broader stance, but a little bit more specific stance, or really highlight climate change as a, for me, a public health issue more broadly and here. But, you know, there is some environmental, without a doubt, there's some environmental provisions in the bill, but really attacking climate change. And the problem with climate change is that it's so different in each community. What climate change in Louisiana looks different than in Denver, that looks different in Michigan. And so really thinking about how we can comprehensively think about climate change across geographies, of course, different places in the state. Some people are worried about flooding, some people are worried about droughts, right? And so that's the issue with climate change. But I think it's something that we really have to think about, because it's going to, it already has, and it's going to continue to impact communities that we care about.
Yeah, no, there's I mean, always more to do, and then just more to iterate on as well. So it was, even in this piece of legislation, like the provisions, I mean, this is not an exhaustive list of the provisions I like in this legislation, but the one in particular I'll highlight is the one that removes the waiver period for immigrants to access public benefits through like Medicaid and CHIP. And this is something for, you know, that we see in our service population as being a significant, you know, barrier for family, individuals and families to receive the care they need. But the other part of this that I think we all need to just be a little bit more clear-eyed on is how you not have, still, you know, not just have a patchwork system that doesn't clearly get individuals and families from to a place of self-sufficiency or stability. Often, so maybe that's a more important role for community-based organizations to play in moving families along. Maybe it's just, not having different kinds of means tests for access to different services. I mean, if it's outlined in the next iteration of this, how some of these really good provisions are gonna all work in concert together for that basic goal of getting families' basic needs met and to a place of stability or self-sufficiency, I think that's something that would be a really good contribution from our working group, which is not to say that it's not there in the bill, but just maybe not spelled out in that way is what an integrated system would look like. The other things that I'm, you know, I just think are important, you know, from my own experience, I'm always in favor of provisions that serve individuals with disabilities, but dependency-making disabilities. From personal experience, I have a sibling who has a dependency-making disability, and watching my mother, it didn't matter from her, she was from the Dominican Republic, my father from Syria, it didn't matter who was representing my sister in a case with a healthcare service provider, there was this issue of almost marginalization, even within the broader movement for, you know, disability rights for individuals who have dependency-making disabilities. So just continuing to kind of push the needle there. There's a lot of really good stuff in the bill for that end. So none of this is intended to say that, you know, what's been there is not good, but just that there's always more to plumb when it comes to these sorts of these policy areas.
Yeah, I think that's awesome and a good thing to sort of highlight. It's like that there are things that we included this time that are really great, but there's always room to build on those ideas and those policies. And I think I like what you said about kind of making sure that, figuring out how all the policies work together, because I think in such a large bill like this, sometimes we have so many great ideas that it's not, we're not necessarily thinking about it, like, how do they all work together? And then what are the gaps that still remain when we kind of put all these policies together? So that's great. And I'm also from the Dominican Republic, so I didn't know that about you. So I'm learning new things. That's great as well. So one thing, this is a question that we received ahead of time before the event that I kind of wanted to touch on, because I think it's something that's kind of on people's minds more on the political side. So I'll politics and policy. So I'll can answer this, and we'll ask you guys to jump in if you have anything else to add. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about how the Republicans might gain power in the House or the Senate. And I think, you know, while we should prepare for all different scenarios, you know, not to say that one will happen, one won't happen, but I think it's always good to kind of think, it's a good thinking exercise to figure out how would we work on health equity issues in, let's say, a Congress that was Republican or a House that was Republican led. And so I think to the point that we were talking about earlier, I think health equity is more just mainstream now, and it is something that, you know, we have been able to find some Republican support for, which is good. At least I can speak from my office's perspective. The Congresswoman worked really, really hard to get the Maternal Health Quality Improvement Act passed into law, and that got passed into law a few weeks ago with the appropriations bill for FY 2022. And so that bill would authorize funding for programs that would develop best practices and emergency protocols for pregnant women and birthing people, because as we know, or as maybe we don't know, but there's a huge maternal health crisis in this country, and it disproportionately impacts Black women, Indigenous women, and Latino women. And so wanting to make sure that we have the services to really deal with that and address that head on. And this bill is part of the Congresswoman's larger Mamas Act, her signature and comprehensive maternal health bill that was first introduced in 2018. So she's really been sounding the alarm on these issues for a long time. And so all that to say that in the bill that was just passed into law, we also have grant funding to address implicit and explicit bias in providers, right? Because that can be a contributor, because it's hard to explain how women across, you know, dependent, irrespective of education and income, still are dying at disproportionate rates. And so I think I was really excited that that got passed into law in a very strong bipartisan manner. So I think there is hope, but obviously it would be a little bit more difficult. So I was wondering if in either of your experiences, if you had anything else to add in how to kind of work on equity issues in a bipartisan manner.
I always welcome the challenge to like try to articulate the same goals, which come from our perspective, it comes from our service departments or from community members we hear directly from. So there's not a lot of room for compromise in that sense when you're getting it from, you know, the grassroots or the bottom, so to speak. But it's a new challenge to try to force it through different, you know, institutional, you know, structure, bureaucratic structure. And oftentimes members of the others, you know, when you're trying to get something done bipartisanly, it forces you to consider different policy considerations. Whereas when you're talking to those who maybe you already share certain priors, you're just sort of sowing, right? Sowing, and then later on you'll reap, maybe down the line. Now it's a new challenge for us to try to see, okay, if I'm trying to expand eligibility for our immigrant clients to receive public benefits, what is the way that we're gonna account for this, you know, in a broader budgetary consideration? Or how are you gonna create work opportunities for them on the back end so that you're contributing to the maintenance of individuals and families, but they're also going to now contribute, which is sort of the whole point of equity in this classical sense I've been talking about, right? So stakes in the present and future, you ultimately want them to be working, contributing members of society, even if that talking point is used in a cynical way sometimes. It's well intended, you know what I mean? Like, you know, yeah, no, I do want our clients to be productive and contributing members of society. They also want to as well. So it's just a new challenge of how to push your the goals that for us just come from those directly impacted in the first place.
I'll keep mine really short. I think, you know, like Adam said, it's a challenge, but it's also, it's important actually, I think, because if we can succeed in doing that in that environment, then it actually gives more credence and kind of support to that work. I think healthcare and health in general is a bipartisan issue, right? And it's just how we attack it. And, you know, everybody wants their communities to be healthy. I saw a question in the chat about addressing state level policy. You know, some of it's also coming at particular senators or representative about what's going on in their state. Some of them may not realize that. You may be able to open a door for them to say, look, this is happening in your state, and this would address it. And so then it's a little bit of a long shot, but sometimes it does, then they might be able to then convince their other colleagues because it's important to their area. And so I don't ever, you know, making it personal is very helpful for getting these kind of things passed. And so sometimes that's what we have to do if, you know, the Congress is not on the side that normally supports these kind of actions. But it is a challenge, and it's a challenge that we have to deal with.
Yeah, and it's also an opportunity. So I think that's kind of what you both are getting at too. And something else to highlight is that although HEA focuses on racial and ethnic diverse communities and their needs and health equity from that lens, health equity is really something that affects rural communities. It can affect aging communities. It can affect a lot of different types of communities that might be more present in Republican-led states, or maybe kind of issues that they care more about. But I think the rural issues have been a very good entry point for health equity conversations, because there are in the maternal health space as well, right? Like there are a ton of disparities between rural healthcare and healthcare in urban areas when it comes to maternal health outcomes. So that's just one example, but there are quite a few. So I think that's great. I did want to ask one final question, and then like open it up to questions. I know we've been getting a bunch of questions in the chat too, so we want to be responsive to those. So I wanted to take a step back a little bit and just ask you guys why everyday people should care about HEA, right? So I think, you know, in the policy space, like I think we're kind of talking to that audience, but if there are folks on the call who maybe are not in the policy space, or if just like you were to tell someone on the street, like why the Health Equity and Accountability Act is important and why it matters, like what are some things you might tell a person like that?
I can start. I think the important part is that we're really trying to address the things that impact people's everyday lives, right? So, and it's important for us to think about, you know, I use the word, and I'm sure people on this call are tired of me saying it, but health promoting environments, right? So how do we create environments where people have access to the resources they need, whether that's food, whether that's housing, whether that's jobs, transportation, all of those things that make people, you know, feel good about themselves, who say, you know, I just want to live somewhere nice. I just want to be able to afford where I live. I just want to be able, you know, I think this sense that people don't want to eat healthy or people don't want to live in good environments is false. Most people want that, but if they don't have access or things are, it's hard for them to get to, then they can't. And so it's really important to me to say, you know, these kind of policies really do impact people's everyday lives, and being able to help support people to live the lives that they want to live is what's important to me. And it's what legislation like this is trying to get at. It's hard. It doesn't always get to everybody we need it to get, but our intention is for that to happen, to make it easier for people to have access to the resources so that they can live the life that they want to live to the best way that they want to live it.
And I would just quickly add that it touches on two things that I think are like felt in people's everyday life and everyday experience with the healthcare system, equity and accountability. Equity in the sense meant by, do I feel like I'm being served, but do I have stake and therefore do I have stake in the society that's serving me? And then accountability, like how, if it's a yes or no to that question, how am I ensuring, how are we ensuring that the healthcare system is making good on its promise to us? So I think a lot of the, you know, in a general sense, this bill really does answer or move the needle forward on both. And then also because of Dr. Burgos, like what you said about the role that the legislation itself or the function of the legislation itself, not always intended to pass as such, if ever, but always intended to have kind of the provisions that come from those with the most stake in the issue that they're, you know, proposing a solution on, unencumbered by like the need to be articulated in a way that's going to pass through on its own. So you have sort of, you know, forward thinking, almost forward thinking legislation that isn't supposed to pass through institutional constraints. It's a really good place for everyday people to look at to see what the future of healthcare policy may look like. I would just say that as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And so I'm kind of taking a look on the chat. If other people have questions, please feel free to drop them in the chat. Some of the more comments, which I think we were addressed to a certain extent. So one of the questions was about health literacy. I think it's something we haven't really talked about explicitly right now, sort of during our conversation. So are there more robust efforts to address health literacy included in HIA? And if yes, what might those efforts look like? I would have to double check to see if they're what we have on health literacy. I believe we do have some provisions on that. And I think that's a really good point. Like, health literacy is very important, and having the support for folks like health navigators and people who can help individuals whose English may be a second language, or maybe are new to the country, or otherwise just aren't super savvy when it comes to navigating the healthcare space, just have those that help to do so, I think can make all the difference. And so didn't know if either of you wanted to add anything either about health literacy efforts in HIA or health literacy in general.
Yeah, one thing I just mentioned, I believe there's a provision in there that like racial and ethnic approaches to community health, which I think is the construction of that program would get at some of these like health literacy in the sense of behaviors from populations that may contribute to chronic health conditions, and they just don't really know, they're not really screening for those on themselves. So you involve community-based organizations who can communicate some of that to their client base in a way that resonates with them based on their kind of cultural and linguistic affinity, is the type of approach that I think works and is being demonstrated right now. And so there's language in HIA that expands on that approach. That's just one example I'd give.
Great. And so another question that came into the chat was about obesity. And so are there provisions in the bill to address the disease of obesity access and coverage issues, particularly in light of its disproportionate impact on communities of color? And so that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. And I can start off because Title VII is the title that I was leading on. On my team in Representative Kelly's office, I'm working really closely with the AAAS fellow, Shahana Kozlowski, who's been wonderful. And we've both been sort of tag teaming, kind of going through all the edits for the different titles. And so Title VII is a title that I took the lead on. And so there is an entire section on obesity. Well, it's sort of obesity and a couple of other diseases, but there is a total section in Title VII, which addresses diseases of high impact to communities of color. And so I don't think there right now is anything that addresses coverage issues, but I do know we've received submissions from offices on a variety of different bills. And so we're still looking through those bills to see which ones will be included and which ones won't. The bill is very large as it is. So we can't include every single bill that people ask us to include, but really we're looking for bills that don't address COVID-19 directly, that have a racial, ethnic, disparate health equity lens and focus, and those bills that are addressing something that's addressing a gap in the bill as it stands. I will say one of the it's sort of a standalone bill that the Congresswoman has introduced that will probably be included in Title VII is the Medical Nutrition Therapy Act. And so this bill would make it easier to be referred to services, nutrition services that could help individuals who are obese or are trying to make some dietary changes. So that is something that for sure, I will not for sure, but I'm very sure will be included. And I don't know if either of you, I know you both didn't work on that, so probably don't have anything else to add there. So we have a question about what are a few things that busy clinicians can do to move this work forward? And so I think being here is great. Participating in this conversation is wonderful. And talking about the work that's going on in Congress and that advocacy groups are doing is great. I know that there are a lot of advocacy groups that have participated in HIA, and also groups that represent different types of providers. So you might want to if they aren't on our radar, tell us about the groups that you're connected with, your professional organization, so we can let them know about HIA. And I'll drop my email in the chat. So if you have any other follow-up questions, feel free to circle back. So I think those are all the questions. I'll give folks one more minute to drop any questions in the chat. But as we're sort of wrapping up, I wanted to touch on some of the things that we've talked about today. So this has been an awesome conversation. So really thankful to Mr. Badawi and Dr. Isaac for being with us today, for being awesome partners throughout all of HIA. So just really grateful for you two and appreciate you two. So today during our conversation, we really touched a lot on the social determinants of health. And how it's not just the health that you receive in a doctor's office, it really goes so far beyond that. And there is an increased kind of awareness about that, but we really need to keep challenging ourselves to think about health in a way that encompasses housing, encompasses environment, the environment around us, and encompasses a bunch of different things. And also mental health and physical health together, right? So I think even within the healthcare space, sometimes we think about those two things separately. So just kind of thinking about the person in a holistic way, their health needs, and also their kind of social determinants of health. We talked a lot about inclusion of different populations. So really grateful to have Mr. Badawi here to talk about that and the importance of incorporating the MENA community in the discussions of equity. So really appreciate that. Also, we talked a lot about COVID-19, how we're continuing to learn lessons from COVID-19, and there's a lot that COVID-19 showed us about the inequities in our system. And so now we have just such clear evidence, and it's so raw, and people can't really deny it anymore. And so I think that has been a big force in HIA this year, this time around. So with that, I think we'll wrap up a few minutes earlier. I do want to remind folks before we leave that the annual NMQF Leadership Summit on Health Disparities will be taking place between April 25th and April 26th. And we're so glad that this event will be taking place. And if you are interested in signing up, please click on the link there. We'll be talking about health equity in all different types of ways. There will be an increased focus on that summit on mental health and also environmental justice issues. So it will be a great opportunity to highlight two things that often don't get enough attention in the healthcare space. So really excited about those conversations. And again, I want to thank our panelists. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you all in the audience for tuning in on a Friday during lunch to hear about the Health Equity and Accountability Act. I dropped my email in the chat. And so, yeah, feel free to reach out if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.